Good afternoon. It's Tuesday at 5 o'clock in the UK. Welcome to What Comes Next Live. My guest this week is Bruce Lloyd, Emeritus Professor at the South Bank. I'm sure he might explain that in more detail for us. And Bruce and I met in the audience of a session at the RSA a couple of years ago and got into a really interesting dialogue, which continues to this day with emails and papers being thrown at me by the esteemed Professor Lloyd, around the topic of wisdom, something he has written on and around for years. So I am looking forward to hearing what comes next, what's on the mind of the sage Bruce Lloyd. Welcome, Bruce.
Thank you very much, Tom. Yes, I much enjoyed our interactions and have learned a lot from your insights and your enormous energy and enthusiasm.
Thank you.
I'll come back to later. But just a bit of brief background. I was born in Guernsey, a little island. You know a lot about islands. Mm-hmm. And came to London to go to university, did chemical engineering, went to business school, had a zigzag career in industry and finance. In the city, venture capital with BP and ICI on new venture development. And then really by accident, academic world, which I was very fortunate to get into it then. I'm not sure that I would fit in so well now as I did then, because I've always been a bit of an outsider rather than an organizational person. And it so happened, for reasons that I don't really understand, I got into writing, which was rather surprising because I wasn't very good at writing at school. I wasn't very enthusiastic about school at all because I was asking, what's the point of this, too often? And created a lot of difficulties. But I got into that, and interestingly enough, it stood me in good stead. In the end, it got me into the academic world, really, in the 90s, although I got into it, as I say, by accident, and ended up being concerned with strategy and future studies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it so happened that I'd been involved with future studies in the 60s as an outsider in all sorts of various things. And I one of the issues that is perhaps interesting for people who have to look at how do you define success is I've had been involved in a lot of different things. And to some extent, I've suffered from not having focus.
Yeah.
But that is something that panders in a way to strategy and future studies, because what you're doing there is making connections.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just to go for a minute on the point that you raised about wisdom, that was an interesting area that I tripped into, I suppose, in the 1990s. I was involved with a project called the Millennium Project, which was looking at, well, what's going to happen in the future, run up to the millennium. And one of the things that I noticed was that while that project did a lot of incredibly good work and still does and produces an annual report called State of the Future, if anybody wants to look it up. But in the run-up to the millennium, nobody was asking the question, well, what have we learned from the last 2,000 years that were, or even longer than that, that's important to pass on to the future generations? So I wrote a short article called Messages for the New Millennium. Now, linked in with that, I'd been involved with strategy when the buzz phrase was knowledge management. And the buzz pyramid was the pyramid data, information, knowledge, wisdom. And very few people talked about wisdom. So I put together a paper that looked at these relationships, particularly in the context of the relationship between power and responsibility and leadership. And it seemed to be touching a nerve in lots of different areas and got recycled in many different outlets, which kept me busy for quite a long time. Now, that was one of the main, I think one of the main focus that I ended up looking at, although looking back, there's been about a dozen different topics, and strangely enough, I was in the right place at the right time to do my PhD in the early 1990s on the future of offices and office work, which is, if you aren't very careful and you press the wrong buttons, I can easily go and recycle a potted lecture on that subject, which has become even more topical now. So that's a bit of potted history background. Hmm. Now, what's on my mind at the moment?
Yeah.
I suppose two directions.
Mm-hmm.
One is the personal direction.
Mm-hmm.
And having not moved for 50 years, this last 18 months has been a massive excuse, and there's been quite a bit of external pressure for this, to declutter the books and papers that I've collected over the last 50 years. And I've been a book review, was a book review editor of Long Range Planning for 25 years. And there's no shortage of books. You can see a few of them in the background. And there's been no shortage of bits of paper that I've collected where I thought that I might conceivably follow up on some of the things I've written about. And so that decluttering has been a major challenge. In addition to that, I think I've had the weakness of being rather addicted to reading the papers and watching the news, which is a very demoralizing activity.
Right.
And I'm not quite sure whether there's an association that you can go to, like Alcoholics Anonymous, that gets you off that addiction. But I think it is quite liberating, the people that I come across who manage somehow to avoid reading the papers, or they might read the sports pages, but they don't read the news. And it's an issue that makes me really wonder how much we've learned. Society is facing enormous challenges at the moment.
Mm.
And technologically, we appear to have made enormous progress. But how we use that technology wisely, I'm not so sure that we have made very much, if any, progress at all. And it's a massive challenge for future generations that have challenges that I don't know how I would have coped with them if I'd been had to cope with them 50 years ago or more. I think probably nowadays I'd have been defined as having attention deficit disorder. I think almost every child these days runs the risk of having attention deficit disorder, because they're confronted with just so many choices.
I'm not a child, 55, and I've got a couple of years on you.
you've got a decade or two.
Well, yeah.
thank you.
And I was turning, I turned around the other day on the phone to my 50-year-old brother and I said, I think I might have ADD. And he went, well done. You've realized what everybody that knows you well has known since you were a small child.
Interesting.
And I thought that was really interesting. I totally get what you're talking about because, you know, how often I've got a lot better at not checking my phone all the time. I've used certain techniques and things around that. But I used to be, when BlackBerrys first came in, and I worked in a business managing lots of people and lots of different businesses, BlackBerry was this idea of having email in your pocket within about 10 years of the internet and email coming in. It was addictive. I was constantly living on it. And one of my young kids said to me at one point, one of my kids when they were young, said, you're with us, but you're not with us. So at that point, that was a very emotive thing, and I started to address it. That said, yes, clearly, technically, you know, I've got some good friends who live for the 24-hour news cycle. You know, I've got a friend who's very, very, very brilliant guy who's a political animal and has been a Whitehall political strategist his entire career, right? While he's a huge big picture thinker, he also seems with massive energy to be able to handle dealing with the intricacies of the political, you know, the political tactics hour by hour, minute by minute, 24-hour news cycle. So I think if you can avoid the news entirely, I know somebody I'm thinking of right now who never looks at the day-to-day news, never looks at the newspaper, never has, but they're deeply connected with the big questions for the human race, right? And perhaps there is part of that. But, you know, the other thing is just an interesting combination of things, because I think a level of curiosity that might power somebody to constantly be looking at what's happening might be useful to a certain degree. Although for me, I quite like it when I'm able to switch my brain off by choosing different activities. But if I just sit, I have to be looking at something, thinking about something, doing something.
Well, I think that a couple of things on that. One is that I think that you benefit, despite the limitations you were talking about, for an ability to be focused.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never really been good at being focused. I can be focused on getting an article finished in this relatively short period of time in the past, but I've never really run an organization.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did for a while help set up the management center at South Bank in the early 90s. And so that required an incredible amount actually of focus, but very quickly that got reorganized.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing about curiosity, I rather like the quote of Einstein's, which I think I have a little bit in common, and you might as well. He said, modestly, I'm saying,
yeah.
He said, I'm not particularly bright, but I'm insatiably curious.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been involved in trying to ask questions or challenge situations. That doesn't make you a very good committee man, person, these days, because you always run the risk, if you're challenging something, for the chair to turn around and say, well, would you look at this? I learned that the hard way, and have tended to avoid being on committees, because if you end up by challenging anything, you have another job, and it isn't the job that you wanted to do. It's the job that they wanted you to do. And I'm not very good at doing jobs other people want me to do. That might well be, and it's an interesting side issue, but despite being married and I haven't had any children, and the, most of the people I've been involved with haven't had any children either. And I've never been able to answer the question, why am I having children, let alone how would I bring them up? And so, and the level of uncertainty, and I suppose having a very questioning scientific background, despite an engineering qualification, which I never really got involved in, I've found too much uncertainty over the answers, and that was an excuse for avoiding taking the decisions. Of course, in the past, most of the decisions were taken for you by either your partner or by accidents. But I've got nieces and nephews, and and know a lot of people who've got children, young children now, and I think they're having a very, very tough time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, before we go further, it's like I love the spinning things backwards and forwards. The committee thing, I thought you might have gone in a different direction. A few years ago, I learned the abbreviation CLM for career limiting move, right? Which is when you speak out, you know, in a committee.
Yes.
But it's an interesting thing where a leader, a chair, a CEO makes the assumption, they go with the golden rule, treat others as they wish to be treated. Now, when perhaps when they were a junior person on the committee and they put an idea up, they would love to be said, okay, you go solve it, right? But not everybody has the same style. Some people are connectors of ideas, but they're not operators, and they're not people who will take on a management and lead and resourcing and leadership role. So the platinum rule is to treat others the way they wish to be treated. And if they turn around and said, Mr. Lloyd, that's a great idea, could you research a solution for us, right? And then we'll have an implement to make it happen. And you might have gone, oh, that's great. So let's just spin that plate for a minute. But the other piece is, you're talking about one of the big human things around to have kids or not, and I have three. But it, what I would refer to is many people over the years have said to me, you need to write a book.
Yes.
I've got to the point on a, you know, a model around leadership archetypes and behaviors that I've developed, evolved from what I learned from somebody else years ago. I have a book. It's ready to write. I've framed it up. But it came up again this summer. Early summer, I always kind of think, what's my summer project going to be? Because I always do something. But then I end up speaking to a friend of mine, and we're sounding boards for each other. And she said, having just published a book, right? A business book. I realized in talking to her, I said, I don't have a strong enough why for doing this. And that's not a rational analytical thing. But if I felt really strongly that the world needed to read my book, I would push through the process of getting a publisher, getting an editor, you know, bleeding the way through it, because I write every day, but I don't write like Hemingway where you sit at the typewriter and bleed.
No,
a friend of mine from Cayman is a lady called Sarah Collins, and she had the very rare thing of being in the UK and deciding to write a book, and it became a smash hit bestseller, which is now going to be a 4-part series on ITV, and they've just announced the cast. But when she talks about it, she talks about the fact that she had to shut off her life for several years.
Yeah.
And, you know, friends didn't get it. Family, you know, she didn't spend any time with family. She was, you know, basically nothing in her life apart from the book for several years. Now there's a parallel. So an aphorism I have is if you get clear on the why, the how is easy. Now I can speak from well, I still am a parent. I'm going to go see my boys in Cayman next week. I'm really excited. But you know, no matter how much preparation you do, you go into it going, oh, I was 28 when I had my first kid. And I, at that point, I thought I knew a whole hell of a lot about a hell of a lot with the world of work and life and everything like this. The second he appears, no matter how much prep you do, you go, I have no idea what I'm going to do for the next 18 plus years. But I knew it was not an analytical thing, but you went, that's a big life
you
decision.
You had to do it.
But you, I just felt, it's a bit like being an entrepreneur. If I ask an entrepreneur, why did you start your business? Their answer is always words to this effect. Bad grammar and all. I couldn't not do it. And so there are things in life that when we feel strong enough that we couldn't not do it, we do it. Whether it's having kids, writing a book, going in a certain direction, you know, going away to London to university many years ago and living in the same house for 50 years. And family in Guernsey going, when are you coming back, Bruce? You go, no, I've got to be here. It's like...
I tried to go back about 10 years ago, but it didn't work for various reasons. We won't go there. But I think that just a minute on the children issue. I don't know whether it's because I'm not responsible enough, or because I'm too responsible. But one of the things that is very noticeable in a way is you almost lose control of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be very rewarding and very beneficial if that's your agenda and you're happy to do that and you've got the right support. But again, it's often a matter of having the right support. And I think domestically, 80% of the decisions usually are taken by your partner. So that's something that, and you have to have very good conversational skills. And I can come back to that because I think that's an issue that we don't spend enough attention on. Mm-hmm. But just as an aside, I've played around with the idea of writing a book. And I've got as far as the title, and it's a good challenge to start with the title. And the title is, or would be, or one of the possible titles, is Putting the World to Right, My Waste Paper Basket is Full Again. And it's all about having lots of ideas, but not really doing enough to put them into practice. And an alternative way of looking at that title would be to say, he did a lot, but he didn't achieve very much. And so that's the sort of frustration you get out of feeling that, well, you've written a lot about a lot of things, but it doesn't look as if there's been much real progress that's come from it. And the one issue which I haven't written much about is, but I say this to the strategy students, that in the end, the quality of the decisions that we take depends more on the quality of the conversations that we have than on anything else. And that is critically important at a board level and at strategy. And by and large, nobody's researching that. And we're not spending enough time trying to develop and people's conversational skills, constructive conversations. And in this lockdown period, a lot of people have got very, very frustrated because they didn't have the conversational skills
right
to create a constructive environment. And I think that's one of the challenges that we face at the moment. And the more change that's going on, the more you need those positive conversational skills. And there is a hell of a lot of change going on, so much change going on that I find it's impossible to keep up with it. I have a very old fashioned, mobile phone, but it's not a smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not on social media although I've got a site on LinkedIn and I don't do anything with Twitter or Facebook or all these others. Partly because I just don't have the time. And if you want to do most of them, you have to sort of do them seriously. You can't do them half-heartedly.
So, Bruce, you have just demonstrated a mechanism that the great majority of people in the developed world don't have. You've consciously chosen to stay off them. It's a little bit like when I played a video game about 20 years ago and found myself doing the tutorial till 4 in the morning of some involved video game and then not going to bed on a weeknight, you know, without proper sleep. And I went, I cannot start playing these modern, you know, PC-based video games because I will just have, there are more important things in life. But the thing about...
But just to make a comment there, but we're now running courses at the university on how to produce these games.
Oh, totally. And they are, but that's a self-awareness thing for me, and yours is similar with social media. But yeah, one of my friends and a past guest on the show, his business is making video games. Some of which my sons have played. And when I sit in and watch them play, right, there's a lot of positives to that. It's just a choice. I want to come back, but we can talk for hours and we often do, but we only have a few left. But around the piece of, you know, achieving things, first 20 or so years of my career was all about measurable metrics in business, basically driven by, you know, do this and you will get this outcome. It was very measurable, financials, other non-financial metrics. And my obsession became human behavior and therefore culture and leadership.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons I feel it's not sufficient attention is paid to it is because it's not always immediately measurable. But I'd wrap up by my thoughts for this moment is that, you and I have a hearty conversation about what wisdom is. And I tend to distill things, and I'm going to give you the distillate for the audience now and later. I give you the distillation I gave you, which you then would then got you into the conversation with me, which is that wisdom is something concise that when you hear it, you feel you always knew it. Now, a few minutes ago, Bruce, you said the quality of the decisions we take depend on the quality of the conversations we have more than anything else. To me, that is a fundamentally important piece of distilled, concise wisdom. And if for any person who pays attention to that, yes, as you then noted, research, you know, isn't really being done on that. But I'm literally going to sit down tomorrow morning and write the next day's daily post on that. And I work with leaders all the time, and we can define conversations in different ways. What's the information we look at? What are the questions we're asking? What are the answers we're giving? Are we really listening? How much time are we taking over asking and answering the right questions before we make a decision? But you've made it incredibly concise, and I feel that's an amazing piece of wisdom, which while not immediately measurable, anybody who pays attention to that couplet will have achieved things by sharing that.
Well, I'm pleased about that because I think that the key dimension of wisdom and a lot of other things that don't get given the attention they deserve in the leadership package is the whole values agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people make it very complicated, but in essence, I always think that the values agenda is how you relate to other people. And that enables anybody who's looking at the subject to see why things that are considered wise apply globally. They apply in all different parts of the world because they're about what makes relationships work, what makes society work, and what makes your relationship with the universe work. And it's a values agenda. Now, it might be fuzzy, but that doesn't mean to say there isn't an enormous amount of underlying agreement over it. And if we could focus on those things that we agree on, rather than spending lots of time as a, almost esoterically trying to develop differences, society would be much better off.
Yeah, a sort of values agenda about how you relate to other people. And this is going to be really emotive and evocative that this came into my mind, because you said at the beginning about making connections because you had a varied career. One of the areas of the brain that continues to develop as we age is the part that allows pattern matching, allows making connections. So the more experience we've had in more varied places, the more powerful it is as we age. Oddly enough, the Taliban in Afghanistan comes to mind. Now, there are huge ways in which they are applying Sharia law, including being horribly misogynistic, that anybody with different values would find they can't have a conversation about, right? So you can't, but I'm reading a long thread right now online explaining how they apply it, because it is consistent, and what drives them to apply that. No matter how much we disagree with it, if we seek first to understand, to paraphrase Stephen Covey, then we can make better decisions. And I think any external advisor or anybody looking at it externally can look at how that's been handled by the West in the last week. And the images of people hanging off a plane trying to take off will be just like the image of the burning child in Vietnam.
Horrendous.
And I look at politicians like Rory Stewart, who spent many formative years out there. And all he's looking to do right now, other than to change direction and take people in, he's looking to help people understand.
Yes.
No matter how much we disagree with other humans, how you relate to people impacts the quality of the conversations we have and impacts the quality of the decisions we make.
That's absolutely right. If I can add just one query to that, and it's a dilemma that I have not resolved in any way, but I think it's so fundamental, is that scenario, that package that you just described, is fantastically valuable for what I would call reasonable professional people. But I do not know the answer how you have a constructive conversation with somebody who doesn't want to listen and thinks they have all the answers. And that is the biggest challenge I think that society faces today. And how do you bring up the next generation to make sure that we have fewer of these people?
Well, sometimes the question is as important as the answer. And we won't answer them today. You have
posted. Well, if anybody has the answer to that on the postcard, send it to you and I'll.
Well, I noticed you referring back to, changes, shifts in your career and projects you're involved on, and realizing all of them predate my oldest, now 27-year-old child being born. And so little has changed, while at the same time we think so much has changed. So a lot of these questions are eternal. We'll need to wrap up now, Bruce. So as always, I like to give my guest a closing word or two. What are your closing thoughts?
Well, I think that the most important issue, I think, is to try to explore the role and importance of wisdom and the need to try to find ways of translating the recycling of wisdom into being wiser in our decision making somehow.
I think if the world could be wiser in decision making, it would make a huge difference. Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you.
I'm glad give people, this is now recorded for posterity, and I'm glad to give people the opportunity to see inside another conversation. Thank you so much.
Great. Well, thank you.
Cheers. Bye.
Cheers.